Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the iSports MSU Red Cedar Report. I am Tyler Hayward. Football is finally here. Well, almost 2 days away. Michigan State opens up their season against Furman. As I said, this is the Red Cedar Report. It is part of iSportsWeb.com. Be sure to check out that website for the latest sports news and opinions. You can like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at Red Cedar Report. There you can listen to all of our past shows. Today on the show, we finally get to preview the college football season for the defending Big Ten champions. And with me today to do that is Ryan McCumber, iSports Web contributor. Ryan, how are you doing, man?
Football is almost here, so I'm feeling pretty good.
Feeling pretty good, yeah. Obviously, there's a lot of things that we could talk about when you look at the top of the Big Ten East in that picture. And, I mean, we will get to it in a second. But right now, when you look at the depth chart that came out the other day, it's really nothing too major popping out like there has been over the past couple of years. What is it that really caught your eye?
It looks like Kevin Williams is going to start the season. To me, that makes it seem like he's picking up the defensive scheme pretty quick. I think that's a really good sign. Donnie Corley was down farther than I guess I thought he would be. He'll probably move up later in the season, though, on the depth chart. But, it looks like Monty Medeiros is going to start, and he's somebody who's been hurt a lot, and if he can stay healthy, I think he'll have a big year.
Monty Medeiros, excuse me, listed as the slot. Obviously, R.J. Shelton listed as one receiver. Felton Davis as the other. And when you look at those receivers, they got Donnie Corley listed right behind Medeiros. Daryl Stewart, he dropped down just a little bit. He's expected to have a big year, even though a lot of the talk around Daryl Stewart, it was kind of funny as you go throughout the fall camp and as you go throughout the summer and the spring, a lot of the talk about Daryl Stewart was just about how quiet he has been but how good he is going to be. And kind of contradicting there, but at the same time, you got to think that comes with a little bit of with at least a few expectations.
Yeah, he's somebody who I'm as you flipped from Boise State a couple of years ago, and I think that he's somebody who could have a solid year. He's probably more of a slot guy. He's speedster, somebody you can bring on end rounds, he's somebody who I think could have a decent contribution this year. I don't think he's going to be like a star, but I think he's somebody who can definitely contribute.
Yeah, I mean, you talked about a speedster and being a slot receiver. Oftentimes, like that's get associated with being a return man. He is listed as the second returner behind R.J. Shelton. He is also the third punt returner behind Shelton and Brandon Bowers. And you've got to think that the expectation is there for him to at least be a contributor. He will end up in the top, let's say Michigan State, what did they do, 5-6 receivers at the most usually in the playing rotation. Davis, Medeiros, Shelton, and Donnie Corley all appear to be locked in. Daryl Stewart is probably number 4 right now with Corley at 5. And then if you look at it, maybe Justin Lane sneaks in. Maybe Ed Barksdale slides his way in there. Are you surprised that Cam Chambers is looking like he's on the outside looking in?
Yeah, because he was an early enrollee. He actually scored a touchdown in the spring game, but I thought that he'd be somebody who was definitely going to play this year. To be honest with you, I thought there'd be three wide receivers who would play this year. I thought it'd be Chambers, Jackson, and Corley, and I thought Justin Lane would be the odd man out, but it looks like that might be Chambers, which is surprising because, he had more time than the two other wide receivers other than Corley to pick up the offense, and I think Chambers is going to be solid, but maybe he just hasn't learned as quick as they hoped.
Hey, he's on his not on his way out, I apologize, but he's on his way to a redshirt season. Looking at quarterback, no surprise, it's Tyler O'Connor. He's going to be the man in charge for the offense. Damian Terry listed to Brian Lewerke, listed as the number three quarterback. Messiah DeWeaver, he's on the depth chart for now. Obviously, that's not going to change unless something very dramatic and very awful happens to Michigan State's quarterback situation, that he'll probably get a red shirt. A lot of the talk, though, I mean, I know you and me have had these conversations off the air about Damian Terry. We don't think he's on the level of Tyler O'Connor. And now a lot of the talk has changed to there's a chance he's not even on the level of Brian Lewerke.
Yeah. You know, I was excited about Terry when he came in as a freshman, but it looks like he hasn't flourished into the type of
quarterback that a lot of us hope he would be. Well, you remember meeting me about the Damian Terry situation.
Oh, yeah. I'm never going to forget that. But, yeah, I mean, people were calling for him to play as a true freshman, and I think that Lewerke might overtake him in the middle of the season for the backup job. I think I've been saying it for a while. I think Brian Lewerke is a quarterback in the future. He's somebody who I think is going to start. He's going to be a three-year starter, I think. I think that he'll start over Terry next year. But, yeah, Damian Terry just is not – I don't hope – maybe he'll surprise me. I hope he does. But I just don't see him as a future starting quarterback at MSU.
Yeah, and – I think that, I mean, Terry's got the skill. Obviously, there are some other issues going on with him. I think is one of his biggest things, ball control in the pocket. You look at the spring game, quarterbacks aren't even live. He fumbled twice. And I don't think that, unlike you, I don't think Lewerke's going to take him over in the middle of the season. I think it's because they did, to be fair, the coaches did say that Terry and Lewerke are a little bit close. He won't overtake Terry until Mark Antonio is absolutely forced to. Let's say, God forbid, something happens to Tyler O'Connor. Then I think you see D'Antonio, reevaluate that situation. And that would be the only way I see him doing it. But you talk about Lewerke. Man, this kid's got probably the best arm since Jeff Smoker or Tony Banks. And I think that all the arm talent is there, obviously, you know, catching on. He seemed a second late in the spring game on a lot of his throws, half a step or something similar to that. And so the talent is there. It's just a matter of whether or not he can put it together. You look at the running back situation, no real surprises. Prescott Line, he's pushing Delton Williams. He's played a lot of SMU, and SMU, they're not afraid to give their fullback the ball. And so I think that the experience of being a fullback as opposed to a full-blown tailback is helping Prescott Lyon in that situation as he's helping Delton Williams get acclimated. You look at the tailback position. Dave Warner has said that he wants to find a go-to guy. And right now it looks like there's three possible go-to guys. As there's no surprises there. LJ Scott, Madre London, and Gerald Holmes all listed as a co-starter.
Yeah, it looks like the same thing as last year. I think they're going to ride a hot hand again all year. I don't think if anybody's going to separate himself, though, I still think it's LJ Scott. As long as he picks up pass protect better than he did last year, I think he'll wind up being the guy towards the end of the year. But I think throughout most of the year, it's going to be three-man rotation, assuming everybody stays healthy. I do think that LJ Scott is definitely a guy who's probably going to take most of the carries, though, at some point.
Well, Warner said he wants a guy to get 20, 25 carries a game, and he wants a second guy to get about 10. I think if any of those two guys do it, it is – and you hate to see a guy lose his job because of injury, but I think it's Holmes and LJ Scott, and I think LJ Scott ends up being the workhorse guy just because you look at the situations in which they played. Yeah, Holmes played a lot, and he might be the toughest guy out of anybody on Michigan State's entire team to try to bring down. But LJ Scott, he was the closer. He put on that Mariano Rivera number 42 jersey for the Yankees, and he closed out the game against Iowa. He closed out the game against Ohio State, and so I think it shows how much faith that the coaching staff has in him, given the fact he was just a true freshman. If not, it spoke a lot about his abilities, and if the coaches were like, hey, look, we're going to run this ball down, we need you. And I think that that's your first sign right there that LJ Scott's going to be the guy. It's just an issue of if he gets that start against Furman, if he gets the hot hand, I think Notre Dame, they might switch things up just a little bit here and there, but LJ Scott is going to end up sticking as the number one running back. Let's turn our attention to the defensive side of the ball. You said Kevin Williams was a little bit of a shock for you. Raekwon Williams is going to be the number two tackle. Wherever he plays, it doesn't really matter. He's listed right behind Kevin Williams and McDowell. There is a lot of hype around Raekwon Williams, and there is a lot of question marks around Kevin Williams with all of his injuries that he suffered at Nebraska. What changed?
I don't know. Obviously the coaches saw something that we don't see. Kevin Williams is a pretty – when he's healthy, he's a pretty good player. Obviously dealt with a lot of injuries in Nebraska. If he stays healthy, he's a guy who I think can have a pretty solid year. I think him and Raekwon Williams are going to rotate more. I don't think that Kevin Williams is going to take really at the majority of the snaps. I think they're going to be split pretty even between the two.
Yeah, if those two are going to rotate, obviously Malik McDowell, he's going to hold down his spot. Where does Mike Panasiak figure to play in this situation, as he looks like he could be the only other true freshman, you know, besides Donnie Corley, who's going to play right away?
Which is somewhat surprising considering, you know, they lost some guys on the line last year, so I thought that Josh King would probably play. We'll see if he does, but Mike Panasiuk is definitely going to wind up playing. I think that he'll spell McDowell every once in a while, even though McDowell's going to be on the field most of the time, and I think he'll play on special teams a little bit. Panasiuk is someone who I do not see being redshirted at all.
Now, one of the things that another thing that we were on the same page on over the offseason, something that happened, Gabe Sherrod, he's not going to come in as a starter. Evan Jones looks like he has that spot locked down. Gabe Sherrod listed behind Demetrius Cooper. Is this the year for Evan Jones?
I think that he'll have a decent year. We'll see if Sherrod can pick up playing at a FBS level. But I think Evan Jones could have a decent year. You mentioned Demetrius Cooper. I think he's going to have a big year. He's somebody who had, I think he had 5.5 sacks last year, and he was mostly a third down, rest the passer type of situation guy.
Let me interject something really quick. I think that that's going to be the type of role that you see Sherrod in this year.
I believe so too. He might pick up more snaps later in the year, but he's got to obviously adjust to playing at an FBS level. It's a big difference from where he was playing. Obviously, he dominated down there, but even he was saying that it's different because he could just easily get off blocks when he was playing at Delaware State. He can't do – he noticed a huge difference practicing, obviously. I mean, it's just a big difference in the level of competition.
Well, you don't expect the numbers to exactly translate over, but he had 25 tackles for a loss as a defensive end, which just absolutely unbelievable at that level. And he did it from the strong side end situation, the bookend situation, over Evan Jones. Obviously, he'll get the pass rushing situation. But Evan Jones, man, he's a guy that you've been looking forward to breaking out ever since he came in as a freshman tight end. So I think that that's going to be the one spot that I'm really curious. He's the only starter without the or next to it that I'm going to keep an eye on as to whether or not he can hold on to that job. And ultimately, I think that he can play consistent. I just don't know if he can play. There's a difference between just being consistent and playing at a Michigan State level on defense, especially on the line. And so I don't know if he can reach that level. I don't know if Michigan State has a guy at that position. Ultimately, if they don't feel like that is going to be the best course of action, you can go Kevin Williams at one tackle spot, Raekwon at the other, and then put Malik McDowell on that end. I don't know how much we'll see it, but I think we'll see it just a little bit.
Especially, I think at third downs for sure. I think that's something that we see.
Yeah. Well, let's skip over the line, then. We'll talk about the linebackers as well. But there's been a lot of talk about they were rough last year. Normally, they have over the past couple seasons had a tendency to give up big plays, but even 2 years ago, when they were giving up big plays, they were still a top 25 pass defense. Last year, 75. Actually, 76 in yards per game through the air, almost 234 yards through the air. But a lot of people are saying this could be the return of the no-fly zone. What's the difference there when we've seen each one of these guys before? Hello, Ryan? All right, it appears that Ryan, we have seen each one of these guys before. Like I mentioned, I think that the biggest difference is the return of Ionte Copeland. He brings something to the table that, I mean, we only saw just a glimpse of last season against Western Michigan. He did a good job on Davis, obviously. The interception that sealed the deal against Western Michigan before he suffered a season-ending injury in the second game against Oregon. Demetrius Cox, he's back at his rightful position. He's back at safety, and I think that that's where he plays a little bit better. Ultimately, he is the captain. He's very important to this team. I don't know if he's the best defense. I don't know if he's the best defensive back. So I think he's a solid safety. He was awful at corner, which I think, to be fair to him, he was playing out of position. But with the way Darian Hicks has the ability to play when he's completely healthy, Monte Nicholson, if he has his head in the game, obviously, he was benched halfway through the season last year, ultimately, and then he came back. He looked like he had a few things figured out as a sophomore that maybe he didn't fully understand when he stepped into the starting role early on. So I think the combination of those four, I think that it makes this group a lot stronger than it was in previous seasons, maybe even over the last two seasons. Obviously, it won't match what we saw in 2013 with Curtis Drummond, Isaiah Lewis, Darquez Denard, and Trey Wayne, but I think that this group has the ability to bring it back. You know, like I said, Nicholson is fixed whatever was going on between the ears. Demetrius Cox, he's back at his normal position. Hicks can play well if he can stay on the field. Ionte Copeland. Harlan Barnett has said that this is the deepest group of defensive backs he's ever had, but there's very little experience beyond that. I think Ryan is back with us, and he's gone again. So we move our attention to the linebackers. No surprises there. Chris Fry, Andrew Dowell listed as co-starters. John Rashley, Riley Bolo listed as the Sam and Mike linebackers, respectively. We're going to go ahead and we're going to try to get in touch with Ryan again. Ryan, what do you think of the linebacker position?
This is the deepest I think it's been in a long time. I mean, even without Ed Davis, you've got four or five guys that we think could start almost anywhere in the conference. Chris Fry, John Reschke, Riley Bulla, you've got absolutely stacked linebackers. that's one position where I think they don't do have absolutely zero worries on this year at all.
Well, and obviously Chris Grye's a fan favorite. Riley Bola, I mean, just the name kind of gave him that reputation around East Lansing. But, God, you watch him in green and white days, and I like him more and more every time they show him on the camera. But when you mentioned the other guys, you did leave off Andrew Dowell, who we talked about it last year. I mean, I think we both had him as our player of the game against Air Force. If I'm not mistaken, Darian Harris, he had his issues in that game. Andrew Dowell came in as a true freshman, shut it down, didn't play a lot the rest of the season, obviously, because, like I said, he was behind Darian Harris. But he does, I think he does bring a little more youth and athleticism to this team. Not that, you know, the other guys playing are 30 years old or anything along those lines, but he does bring that extra boost to that team. Obviously, Fry and Bulla provide the energy, and Reschke, he's just a very, very solid player. But let's talk about Ed Davis. Ed Davis, he applied for the 6-year. He is practicing with the team right now. He will stay on as kind of a student assistant, if you will, so that way he can stay with the team as the Spartans were awaiting word if he graduated, and now that he has officially graduated, they sent in the paperwork. Now they're just waiting on the NCAA. Obviously, they have a tendency to file paperwork through at about the same rate as the DMV. But do you expect to see Ed Davis, and if so, in what role? Because like you said, there's four guys on this team that could start anywhere else in the Big Ten.
I do think he's going to get sixth year. I'm interested to see if, you know, because D'Antonio even said himself, it's going to be, he's going to have to get back up to playing speed. He hasn't played since the Cotton Bowl and when they played against Baylor. So it's been a while since he's played. But, you know, I think he's somebody who's going to be at the start of the season, he'll be a third down, rush the passer type of guy, the way that he was in 2013. I think that's the role you'll see him in to at least start the season.
Yeah, he had 12 tackles for a loss. That was third on the team. He was also third on the team with 7 sacks. He only trailed Calhoun and Rush in that area. You look at the rest of the team, obviously nothing changed there. Kevin Cronin's going to be doing the kickoff.
You want to step that with your deal?
R.J. Shelton, he's got he's looking to have a little bit more of a breakout season, I feel, as a kick returner. And then you have Geiger and Hartbarger as the kicker and punter, respectively. What do you see, like, pretty much covered every position on the team? How far do you think this team can go when you look at how loaded the Big Ten East is and when you look at how brutal Michigan State's schedule is?
You know, I think MSU is probably going to lose Notre Dame for the second game of the season. Other than that, I think they go 10-2, and I think they're probably going to lose to Ohio State. You know, for some reason, they just can't beat Ohio State at home. But I do think they're going to beat Michigan. They should beat Wisconsin. Wisconsin's going to struggle this year. You know, they've got an absolutely loaded schedule. They get most of their tough games at home. The only really tough road game they've got is Notre Dame. So I think they got lucky in that regard. They got their tough games are at home. So the Notre Dame game, they've got time to ease O'Connor in. I think that they'll be good to go once the Michigan game starts.
Yeah, and that's the thing is they do have a lot of their tough games at home, but they have a lot of tough games, BYU, Wisconsin. Both figure into that equation. Obviously, Ohio State and Michigan are there. Notre Dame is going to be an issue on the road. And it's kind of interesting. Well, not interesting. It's unfortunate because there is not a bye week after the Notre Dame game. You go from Notre Dame to Wisconsin, and they're very good defense. Corey Clement, he looks to be healthy after his hernia issues last season. And then you have Indiana's high-powered offense. And you have BYU, who went 9-4 last season. They're bringing in a quicker offense, as well as Ty Detmer as an offensive coordinator. If anybody knows how to pick apart defenses in college football, it's Ty Detmer. And then you just look at the rest of the schedule. It's brutal. Northwestern, right after that, they won 10 games last season. They should be much improved. Anthony Walker's returning. Justin Jackson's returning. Clayton Thorson has another year. And so the schedule's really, really rough for Michigan State, especially given the start. And tell me your thoughts on this. How early – look, let's be real. Before we get to the predictions and throughout the scores, we both expect the game to be a blowout, correct?
Yes, yes. It should not be close.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so the game's going to be a blowout. How early do you bench the starters? Because ultimately, as much as you would want for them to get ready, given the tough haul that they got, especially at the start of the game, especially on the offensive side of the ball, when you're replacing 7 starters from last season, including 3 All-Americans.
I think you've got to keep them in at least a half. In the past, D'Antonio only kept them in. D'Antonio, you know, with Connor Cook and his. I think they took him out in the second half at some point, or he only played a half. I can't remember. But, yeah, I think you got to keep him in for at least 3 quarters.
Yeah, you need this group. You need to figure out what you're doing with the running back situation. You need to stick with it. You need to figure out what your rotation is going to look like with the wide receivers. Obviously, Tony Corley, he's going to play a bigger and bigger factor as the season goes on. But he's got to know what he's doing as he gets ready to go to South Bend. And I think that would really help if you can get Tyler O'Connor into a little bit of a rhythm with these guys. I mean, you saw he was only a couple passes away from taking the job from Connor Cook last season, in 2013 during that. What would have been a 4-way quarterback battle had Damian Terry not been hurt. And so I think that the talent is there. It's just an issue of whether or not he can go and get rhythm. As he was going in periodically, he had his issues trying to keep the momentum going for Michigan State. Ryan, we've got just under 2 minutes left. Let's get to the predictions. What happened Friday night?
It's going to be a blowout. Furman was not. They're an FCS team, and they're not a very good FCS team. I think Michigan State's going to beat them. Probably 42-9. Probably keep the offensive starters in. Probably take them out middle of the third quarter. I'm not sure if they give up a single touchdown. So we'll see. 42-9. Michigan State wins.
He's got 42-9, which obviously goes against what John Reschke wants. John Reschke said no first downs for Furman. I don't think that that's going to be the case, especially if you get to a situation where it is a blowout and you are rotating as much as you can in this game, given the fact you're not going to have an opportunity to do it during a bye week or against Notre Dame, and especially as the season progresses, Wisconsin and all those teams that I mentioned, Indiana and their high-powered offense. So I don't think that that's going to happen either. I've got 37-6. I've got Michigan State winning this game. Furman, you said it, not that great of an FCS school. 4-8, their signature win was against an FBS-level school last year in Central Florida. Central Florida went 0-12. Blake Bortles wasn't walking through that door, and I don't think that there's going to be anyone who can walk through that door that can help Furman Friday night, especially against this Michigan State defense that should be one of the top 10 in the entire country. This does it for us today on the Red Cedar Report podcast. For Ryan McCumber, I am Tyler Hayward. Thank you for listening, and go Green.
Go White.